This is Susan Resnick. Today is June 29th, 2009, and I'm in the lovely home of Dr. Albert W. Johnson in Portland, Oregon. And we are going to be doing his oral history as part of the project funded by the Jane and John Adams mini-grant. Good morning, Dr. Johnson.
Good morning, Susan.
Dr. Johnson, you certainly made so many contributions to San Diego State University, spanning the presidencies of Dr. Love, Dr. Golding, and Dr. Day, and contributed so much, but we'd like to go back and start at the beginning, and I'd like to know when and where you were born. Could you tell me a little about your early years?
Yes, thank you. I was born in a little town by the name of Belvedere, Illinois, a small agricultural community in northern Illinois, on July 29th, 1926, and lived there all the time I was growing up until I went into the military, which I can talk about later, if you like, and then never did go back to live. And now nobody from my family lives in Belvedere, Illinois. I had two parents, of course, mother and father. My mother was the daughter of a Lutheran minister in Belvedere, and played a very active role in the church herself. She was the organist, the choir director, played the piano for all kinds of things. And, of course, raised the children. I have two sisters, had two sisters. Raised us all to be devout Lutherans, and my father started out being a furniture dealer, and in those days the furniture dealers were also the morticians and undertakers, because you see the furniture dealers built the caskets.
Oh, interesting.
So that connection lasted probably up to almost World War II. If you went around it to small towns in any place in the country and scouted out the funeral person, they almost always had some hand in furniture building or dealing. And then the dealing with the dead was a sideline, started out that way, but it soon became the dominant aspect of their life. And that's what happened in my family, too. My father, then about 1942 or so, teamed up with another furniture man, undertaker, and they formed a partnership in Belvedere. And that partnership lasted until, 20 years ago, I suppose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how he ended his career too, as a funeral director, as it did his partner. So that was the setting, kind of. And otherwise, there was nothing really unusual about my childhood or background. The family stayed together. My sisters were older than I by 5 and 7 years, respectively, and we were close. And they eventually married and moved away, and have since died. Yes.
How about the early school years?
Well, it's very typical, I think, of children, young people of my age and geographic location. Mm-hmm. Start out in a school in kindergarten, go through elementary school in a school, through junior high school in a school, move on to the high school, and your whole career is taken up in those places, and the people you started kindergarten with are very often there at the end in high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's typical, and that was the case with me. I was there all the time, and again, stayed there until I went away into the Army.
Did you become interested in science when you were young?
Well, I was always interested in the out-of-doors, let's say. And my grandfather, My father's father was very outdoorsy. He had had a career as a mill worker and as a farmer, actually, as an agricultural person. And he loved the outdoors. And so he taught me how to fish, which I did an enormous amount of, and fish and hunt. And he had a little house right near a sort of a natural preserve. And so he and I have spent days, months together walking up and down the streams. And he was very, very an interesting man and very rugged, outdoorsy, sort of a Mark Twain type, really. My father used to say, well, he's just like Mark Twain, you know. And it was true. He was a rugged, outdoors man. But otherwise, science, yes, I became interested in the more formal aspects of science probably in high school, where I had a very good high school biology teacher and also a good high school physics teacher, the two of them. And because it was World War II, just beginning, the physics teacher also taught a course in meteorology and things a little more applicable to the, I suppose, to the war effort, right? Mm-hmm. So that was my, but I really became interested in biology then. And that coupled with my interest in being outdoors and nature.
And plants,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Plants and animals.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was ready to go to college, I came home briefly after my Army service and worked in a grocery store and then made up my mind during that period, which was just a few months, that I wanted to be a forester. I didn't become a forester, but that was my early thought, and that was consistent with what
right.
my interests were.
Right.
But I did become interested in biology as a career.
Mm-hmm. How long was your service during World War II?
Very brief. I went in right at the end of World War II. I went in the earliest part of 1945.
Oh.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on
yeah.
that day. And was in for until November 15th, 1945. Very brief. I went in as an aviation cadet, and the promise, more or less, from the Air Corps then, it wasn't the Air Force, it was the Army Air Corps,
okay.
was that you would, if you went in as an aviation cadet, they had an obligation to continue in that field, that assignment, until you either left the service or got commissioned as a flying officer. Well, by November 1945, the least thing they needed was more pilots.
Yeah.
So they actually discharged all of us who were aviation cadets. So several thousand of us who were discharged unexpectedly, but very welcome, glad to leave. Yes.
And then, when you came home...
Excuse me. When I came home, I needed to find something to do until I went to college, so I went back to the grocery store, mm-hmm. where I had worked until I went in, and I worked there until March of 1946, and then left for college at Colorado, what was then called Colorado A&M, and it's now called Colorado State University. All the A&Ms became state universities.
Huh.
But the A&Ms were the agricultural schools under the Morrill Act.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And they still have that assignment, but they got rid of the appellation of A&M. That was
yeah.
kind of lower, you know, lower status than being called a university. Yeah.
Yeah. So... You went on in science.
So I went on in science. I did get a degree in biology from Colorado A&M and decided at that point I needed another degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the University of Colorado for a master's degree, which led me to believe that I really needed a PhD.
I understand that.
Yeah. So I did that. And I got my PhD at Boulder 1956.
And were there any particular professors or courses that you really liked or could think about? Or?
Well, I was very attracted to the whole field of genetics. Uh-huh. I didn't become a geneticist. If I have any regret about my college education and subsequent career, it is that I didn't choose genetics to specialize in, because I really enjoyed it, did well in it, still enjoy it, and also, of course, genetics just exploded with the discovery of DNA. And
right.
I would have liked to have been in on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, that, but I had other professors that I liked particularly. I don't know that I would say that any of them was especially inspiring. In my graduate education, I had one professor who was an evolutionary biologist, and he was very influential in my life too. But anyway, most of them I liked well enough,
mm-hmm.
But nobody really. Well, my major professor, a man by the name of John Marr, my major professor was a plant ecologist, and he probably more than anyone else led me to where I was going. Worked for him as a graduate student. Worked for something called the Institute for Arctic and Alpine Research, and did that until the time I finished my degree and went off for my first college job, which was at the University of Alaska.
And during that time, when you were in college, were you, I'm also looking at the historical context. This is right after World War II, I'm trying to think, were you involved in any of the things that were going on politically or socially, or were you pretty much focused on just what you were...
We are pretty much focused on the formal aspects of graduate education, I'd say. I was active in at a low level in politics. I was a big supporter of Adlai Stevenson, for example.
Wow.
I was raised in a family that was staunchly Republican.
I would imagine so.
In northern Illinois.
Yeah.
I think the county I grew up in never voted for a Democrat in all the time I was there until sometime long after I left, they squeaked in a vote for a Democrat. I think it was JFK, perhaps. But anyway, my activities in college in political aspects were really pretty much straightforward party politics kinds mm-hmm. of stuff, but not too active.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not active in campus politics at all.
Okay.
No. And, I think that's true. And otherwise, other activities, social, I was married,
mm-hmm.
three kids, and I was not, I didn't have time to be a fraternity boy nor an interest, really. Mm-hmm. I was interested in what I was doing. I was interested in getting a job. I was interested in supporting my family.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, of course, I got more interested in some of the more controversial aspects of science and mm-hmm. what I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now tell me about your doctorate and what you focused on and how...
Well, the man I was working for, he was my major professor, was John Marr.
Mm-hmm.
And he had maybe a dozen graduate students, and we were all working on a project together, a research project, which was funded by the Army, the Office of the Quartermaster General, to characterize the climate and vegetation of where we were working, in the Front Range of Colorado. Front Range is that range of mountains to the west of Boulder and Denver and Fort Collins and that area.
Okay.
it's probably important to remember that at this time, Russia was something to think about.
Right.
And there was the attitude or the interest in the Quartermaster Corps was, if we have to fight a war against Russia or anybody, do we know enough about the kind of geographic, climatological, biological situation that we're going to find ourselves in? Mm-hmm. So they sponsored, the Quartermaster Corps, sponsored a number of large projects in which they tried to characterize the desert, the chaparral, the northern forest, the tundra, in various places. Mostly in the United States, mostly in the lower continental United States, but in Alaska to some extent, yeah. So, and those were fairly substantial for the time. This was before grant-funded research was really courant at all. It was, my professor's research project that was eventually funded was probably one of the first that the University of Colorado had. And we had 4 years of, it would be called chintzy funding these days,
oh,
but
yes.
It was big for that that time.
Yeah.
And so that kind of led me in the direction of where we were going, where I eventually ended up. And it was exciting because we not only were doing original research, but it had apparently some practical applications, maybe, at least, mm-hmm. potentially.
Yeah, and that is very interesting, given the temporal context of what was going on with the Cold War.
Yeah,
and all of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then what was the next step?
Well, when I finished my degree, and I worked on the plant ecology of a high mountain valley that is part of the Boulder, Colorado watershed.
Okay.
That's where I did my work. And I was really, what I was doing was characterizing that valley as much as possible. It was a pretty descriptive work. Not much analytical, a little bit, but it was mostly to what is a high mountain valley at 10,000 feet? What is it like? What's the climate like summer and winter? What is the vegetation, etc.? And that's really what I was doing there, mostly.
Okay.
I'll let you read my dissertation if you like.
I would like.
No, you wouldn't.
I might.
You might. You might not, too. But anyway, that was the tenor of that research effort. And then, of course, I was looking for a job when I got my degree. And it just happened that a similar job came open at the University of Alaska, just by chance. And I applied for it and got it.
Where in Alaska is
that? That's Fairbanks.
Okay.
So, and I stayed in Fairbanks for 7 years. During that period, I spent a year in Norway. Doing some research over there. But at the end of the, was it 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that period, then I moved from Alaska to California. Went to UCLA. I decided my interests were changing during this period, and that's where my genetics interests started coming to the fore, and I thought, I think I'd really like to get into some genetic research having to do with these plants. And so, again, fortuitously, an opportunity came for a postdoctoral position at UCLA, where I spent 2 years.
Big change from Alaska, I would imagine.
About as big a change as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And spent then 2 years there, doing research with a man by the name of Harlan Lewis, who was a plant geneticist. And then got my job at San Diego State. And you know the rest of it, I suppose.
Well,
from that.
I just know the tip of the iceberg, so to speak.